Welcome to another episode of Behind the Headlines, where we feature experts and journalists discussing a variety of topics. I'm Terry Lipschitz, a senior producer for Lee Enterprises and your host. In this latest episode, Haley Colombo, reporter for Lee Enterprises public service journalism team, talks about her story on logo apparel for colleges and the labor that is being used to produce the clothing. Haley, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me, Terry.
Can you provide just an overall synopsis of what this story is about? Because it felt like there was a lot of pieces in it.
I think it's important for people to know, you know, when they go to the university bookstore on, you know, football Saturday and they're, you know, buying a new t-shirt or whatever to, you know, represent their favorite team. I think we make a lot of those buying decisions and don't necessarily think about what all went into it, you know, what all went into making that shirt that is now, you know, on the rack at my favorite university and, you know, being sold for, you know, $30 or whatever, $25. And what all went into it is like this incredibly, it takes an incredibly complex global labor supply chain to make those clothes, to bring them, you know, to consumers. And the reality is that the people who had the hardest job in making that shirt were compensated late. And often those workers are getting poverty level wages that are, you know, hard for them to subsist on in their, you know, home countries, you know, making the U.S. equivalent of $1 or $2 per hour, which is even in countries where it costs less to live or the, you know, expenses are less, like it's still not enough for them to, you know, have a good life, to, you know, have the even calories that they need to subsist on. And there's lots of abuses that take place in these apparel factories, you know, whether it, you know, people not having the right to form a union or they're, when they try to form a union, being retaliated against for that, sexual harassment, wage theft. And our universities, which are some of our most well-known, you know, brands and most important, you know, institutions in this country, like they themselves are profiting off of this system because they earn, you know, millions of dollars of royalties from the sale of this gear. So we wanted to kind of delve into the conditions that this gear is being made under and delve into what, if anything, universities have done, are doing to ensure that, you know, the people who actually make the garments with their logos on it are being treated fairly.
You had an interesting anecdote early in the story about a factory worker from Honduras. Can you talk a little bit about that example that you used about the working conditions and his wages?
Yeah, absolutely. So I spoke with, his name is Dimas Misael Cardona Barr, and he is a worker in a factory that makes Nike gear. So he had recently worked on a University of Arizona alumni t-shirt that Nike is selling for, or, you know, that the university bookstores or, you know, retailers are selling for $35. He has to make upwards of, you know, works on upwards of like 750 to 1,000 of those shirts a day. And he makes the equivalent of $97 a week. So essentially, you know, that shirt, you know, college football fans who are buying that shirt, you know, are paying more for it than he makes in a single day, you know? And I think it's important to understand that that wage is not adequate for him to have, you know, a middle-class lifestyle. Like, he struggles to make ends meet, even though his wife is working. He has two young kids. One of his kids is a little bit younger than one of mine. So we were talking about that. So, you know, he said it's not enough money to maintain his home. And meanwhile, you know, brands like Nike are profiting handsomely off of this, you know, the sale of this gear, you know. Brands and retailers, like the markup on the shirt is about 70%. Meanwhile, workers earn, you know, 1% or less of the final cost of the shirt. in workers like him and advocates in this industry, advocates fighting for fair wages, you know, have pointed out that brands and retailers could, you know, ensure that workers are being paid fairly. They're profiting handsomely off of it.
Did you get any feedback from apparel companies?
They largely didn't want to talk about this issue. Nike didn't respond to multiple requests for comment, even about specific issues that had come up in their factories. The other, you know, brands that we reached out to kind of, you know, sent back statements, I would say, about, you know, oh, we care about fair treatment of workers. And I don't want to say that they don't, but I think that there's not a lot of, they don't feel a lot of impetus, apparently, you know, to change the situation. And there are a lot of people, you know, suffering under this system. Experts that I talked with who study the global apparel industry have noted that in order to pay workers a fair living wage for them, it would really not drastically impact the cost of a t-shirt, even if they pass 100% of the cost onto consumers. Like, you know, it would, you know, add like a dollar or something like that. Obviously, you could debate whether, you know, like consumers should pay the full cost of doing something like that, or brands and retailers should, you know, eat into their profits a little bit to cover that. But it wouldn't be a drastic investment that they would have to make in order to right the ship.
And there's not really a lot of pressure, it seems, right now to right that ship.
There's been kind of waxing and waning pressure over the last several decades. There was, you know, in the 90s and early 2000s when, you know, after U.S. manufacturing of clothing declined and, you know, more and more clothing started being manufactured overseas in these low-wage countries, there was a big outcry about how apparel was being made. I don't know if people remember, like, Kathy Lee Gifford got into a lot of hot water back in the day for, like, her clothing brand. And there have been, you know, various disasters have happened. Horrible disasters have happened over the years. In 2013, a Bangladesh building collapsed. It's kind of known as the Rana Plaza disaster. And more than 1,000 people died, largely garment workers. And it's the worst, you know, disaster that the industry has ever known. So, you know, when situations like that happen, yes, there's a large outcry. But by and large, obviously, there's really not. Consumers are kind of, you know, going about their day, you know, trying to, you know, consumers are cash strapped as well. They're, you know, I'm in the same
right.
way. Like, I'm not trying to pay as much as possible to buy a t-shirt. Like, you know, you try to pay the least, you know, try to get the best thing you can for the least amount of money to fit in your budget, you
sure.
know? And, you know, I've talked with folks who have said it really shouldn't be on consumers. It should be on the brands and retailers, as well as, you know, the large institutional buyers like universities or like professional sports teams, who put that pressure on the brands and retailers to change their practices.
And the fact that this story is about universities is interesting, because obviously Division I level universities, are big money makers with football programs and basketball programs. And it's, you know, it's not professional sports, but there's a lot of money in it, like professional sports. And you get crowds, you know, of 60,000, 70,000, 80,000 or more going to football games. So it's a huge industry. But at the same time, many of these large schools are also research universities. They study things like labor practices. And it's kind of an interesting situation. So what kind of responsibility do universities bear here?
It's so interesting. And one of the reasons why we focused on university gear, when there is this problem exists across all apparel. Every time you buy a shirt at, you know, insert retailer of your choice, like the same issues are at play. The difference with the university apparel is that they are, you know, public facing, publicly funded, you know, most of the time. Obviously there's private universities, but publicly funded by taxpayers, you know, institutions of higher learning, where, like you're saying, you know, some of the same institutions that, you know, have apparel that's being produced under unfair conditions, those same institutions have, you know, professors there who are studying this issue. You know, experts have said that, you know, universities do play a big role in trying to, you know, correct this. And to their credit, they have, to the extent that anyone has tried to improve this, universities have. And so I talked to university officials too, who are like, you know, kind of begrudging the fact that, like, well, yeah, people are asking us to do more, but we're really the only folks who are doing anything.
Right.
What else can we do? What we discovered is the investment of time, the people who are really engaged in this, it's really not uniform across universities. There's a core group of universities who are really engaged in this work and really seem to care about it and are, you know, trying to, you know, use the leverage that they have. But there's a lot of universities, I would venture to say most, based on our research, who don't appear to be engaged in this and, you know, are large, but, you know, themselves, like, could play a role, could be another voice asking, you know, a brand of choice to, you know, ensure that workers are paid fairly.
Do sponsorships complicate the issue? Because you have like Nike and Adidas and all these brands will be the official shoe sponsor of such and such college football team or the basketball team or whatever. Are these relationships complicating the issue as well?
Absolutely, they are, because Nike, all these other companies, you know, depending on the school, they're paying, you know, $1 million, multiple $1 million every year in the form of these, you know, kind of these deals. And that really, I mean, they're important business partners of the university. So it's tricky because it's this symbiotic relationship. That, you know, what's worth more to the university, the deal, you know, being in good standing with Nike or appeasing some, you know, students who are, you know, activists regarding sweatshop apparel.
Right. You had the interview with the worker from Honduras. You referenced the building collapse in Bangladesh. I know you're story references a case in Bangkok, Thailand also. You have these factories in so many different countries. Is this complicating the situation as well? Because you're it's not like everybody is working in the same country and they're all making apparel in one place. So how is that complicating the situation?
It's incredibly complicated. Honestly, researching this subject, my mind was truly blown about how complex the global supply chain is. I mean, thousands of factories are involved. Schools have, you know, hundreds of licensees who each have their own, you know, set of factories that they use. So it's really hard to track. Like, it is very hard to know. And we, like, I spent a lot of time trying to kind of track, like, a specific shirt and find out which factory that shirt was made in. It is so hard to know. It's almost impossible to know. Like, I was going through these like importing logs, like trying to find these shipments that like would give any sort of clue about, you know, okay, like this factory, you know, had an order that came to the US with Nike, you know, with Adidas or Nike as the customer, and like what was in that order. And it'll just say like men's knit tops or something. And it's like, it's very hard to track. or you'll, you know, obviously any shirt that you're buying, you know, it'll say, or piece of, you know, apparel that you're buying on the physical tag, it will say, you know, made in Honduras, made in Thailand, made in Bangladesh, but it doesn't give any more detail than that. And there's, you know, hundreds, if not more, factories in all these countries. So it's just really hard for folks to monitor. It's really hard for universities. I mean, universities are not in the business of monitoring factories in Thailand. Like, they're just not. So it's hard to know. And what makes it even more complicated is that brands themselves don't really own their own factories. That's not really a thing. They're all subcontractors. So it's like, okay, these are the, you know, hundreds of facilities that where Nike gear is made. But it's not like these people are employees of Nike or employees of Adidas or Under Armour or, you know, whoever. So it makes it really hard to track. And it also makes it really hard for anyone to really truly accept accountability for what happens in these places. Because, you know, the university can say, like, well, this is the brand that we worked with. And the brand can say, well, this is the subcontractor that we used. And sometimes those subcontractors are there subcontracting out to other factories. So in the case of the Rana Plaza disaster, for instance, some brands were surprised that their gear was being made there. Like, there was like tags in the rubble and, you know, and just like some horrifying images where you would see, you know, okay, this gear, this, you know, shirt was made there. And like the brands themselves didn't even know, because that was, you know, a subcontractor, you know, was sewing the sleeves or something. And there's just tremendous, like with an industry that fragmented, there's tremendous pressure on the factories themselves to have labor costs as low as possible.
I mean, you don't want to provide excuses for businesses, but in some ways it's also difficult for them. They can claim, like, well, you know, we hired the subcontractor and they say we're operating on the up and up. But if they're not doing it because they're not employees of these manufacturers, then it is tougher for them to monitor, too.
Right. Absolutely. It absolutely is. I think that, you know, advocates would say, well, yeah, it is tough, but it's also brands and retailers who have, you know, chosen to organize themselves this way, to chosen to use subcontractor that they don't track very well.
Right.
All of this is a choice, and it's a choice that's being made in search of higher and higher profit.
So what's next? Are you going to continue looking at the story? Are there other angles that you're pursuing?
I hope so. Honestly, it's been so fascinating. It's really been so fascinating. I definitely want to keep reporting on it. I mean, I think that it's fascinating to see, you know, what, if any, solutions people have come up with. So one really fascinating, you know, past solution was that there was a, you know, fair trade university logo factory. It's called Alta Gracias in the Dominican Republic. And, you know, universities, like, for a time being, when Alta Gracia was up and running, they would have, you know, displays in the store, like, okay, all these, you know, these people are, you know, earning fair wages. They were, like, on average three times the minimum wage or something like that. They had, you know, union collective bargaining rights. They were working in good conditions. And that factory, unfortunately, closed after COVID. And so what other, like, that was obviously such a creative solution that it was, you know, a kind of a private sector solution. And it did appear to make a difference, or at least show that this model could work. It successfully worked for many years, but the COVID pandemic was kind of the nail in the coffin there. In the past, there was an effort to have, you know, something called a designated suppliers program, where, you know, it would really clamp down on the number of factories that did produce university logo gear, so that the universities could have a really strong oversight of those factories and what went on there. And that was the solution that they were, that a lot of the really involved universities were really hoping for. But that ran into some U.S. antitrust issues and was never, you know, never came to fruition. So what's the next, you know, private sector creative solution? You know, is there government, is there ever going to be government intervention to solve this problem? Or like, is this just a problem that we've accepted as a society as kind of the cost of doing business? I hope not, because, you know, in the reporting, it became very clear to me, like, people are really suffering for something as simple as us being like, oh yeah, I'll pick up a new, you know, a new t-shirt, like a new alma mater t-shirt. Like, there's really, like, there's people who are behind that who, like, are not living good lives, and that doesn't have to be true.
Well, on that note, Haley, appreciate you coming on today to talk about this, and certainly going to think a little bit differently the next time I pick up local apparel, you know, from either a pro or college team, and it does give me something to think about.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Terry.
We hope you enjoyed this latest episode of Behind the Headlines. You can find us on every podcast platform, and we'd love it if you could take a moment to subscribe and leave a review. Finally, if you appreciate what we're doing with this program, we encourage you to invest in local journalism by supporting the newspaper in your community. I'm Terry Lipschitz, thanking you so much for listening to Behind the Headlines from Lee Enterprise.